parents, welcome to the Twiniversity Podcast, a show created exclusively for parents of twins. I'm your host, Natalie Diaz. I am a mom of twins. I am also the Twiniversity founder, and I am the best-selling author of the book, What to Do When You're Having Two. Our goal at Twiniversity is to make sure that you always feel connected, we laugh at the little things, and we really do get to teach you a few tricks along the way. And that is what we hope this podcast is about to do. So welcome to Twiniversity. Kids, I envy you. I so envy you because, truth be told, your options have never been better with Dr. Brown's Options Plus wide neck bottles. From nipple to base, it eases the transition from breast to bottle and back again. Each nipple is specifically engineered to offer the same consistent natural flow so that you and your twins know what to expect at every feeding. The new breast-like nipple shape is correctly contoured for a proper latch and a more natural bottle feeding experience. So together with the anti-colic internal vent system, your twins will feed with minimal fuss. And when your babies are no longer gassy, remove the venting system and continue to use the Options Plus bottle without the extra parts. Brilliant! It really is brilliant. You guys are so lucky. So for more information on the Dr. Brown's Options Plus bottle, visit drbrownsbaby.com. Jewel, today's guest is Amanda, and she's going to tell us all about her TTTS journey.
TTTS, what does that stand for, Natalie?
It's twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome is what it is. And I actually watched this fascinating documentary on Netflix. Jewel, do you remember when I told you to watch that?
I do, and I threw that post-it out.
Julie!
It was on my computer for like 3 months, and I was like, I'm never going to watch this thing.
I literally even told you you could use work time to watch it.
I know. When do I have work time to watch TV? Okay, tell me what it's called again. The Doctors?
Now I got to look it up. Okay. So there's this Netflix show, and it's called like The Surgeons or something like that.
Yes.
I'm going to literally look it up because I can't believe that Julie didn't do this. I'm on my Netflix account right now. Let's see how long ago I watched that. Let me just tell you what's on my Netflix account for fun.
Yes.
Since I've been here, which I get right now, I'm watching the Ted Bundy tapes.
God,
I'm watching. These are all things I'm watching at the same time. The Ted Bundy tapes, a new Netflix show called The One. Please don't even get me started. Murder Among the Mormons that you told me to watch.
Yeah.
A new reality show on Netflix called Marriage or Mortgage, where you get to either choose, do you want a wedding or do you want to buy a house?
Oh, house. After having a very expensive wedding, I pick house.
Yeah, well, that's only because you had the expensive wedding.
I know.
So these people, not so smart. Then I'm also watching a show called Canine Intervention with dogs that cannot come back from existence.
This is very on brand for you, I feel.
Canine Intervention.
All and of I'm, these shows.
Wait, then I'm also watching Living Undocumented about children that are in the United States that do not have citizenship.
Oh.
Because I read that book, American Dirt, and then
yeah.
That was very enlightening. Uh-huh. And then I am also watching Bling Empire about Asian Americans in Los Angeles. And it's like the Real Housewives, but Asian American style and fascinating.
Okay.
And I'm also watching Ozark. Which I'm currently up to. And I am also watching Blown Away, the reality show about glass blowing.
All
now
right.
I have to
you
look
that up and then I'll tell you what I'm watching.
What are you watching?
Survivor.
That's all you're watching?
And it's on Hulu because they don't even have them on Netflix. Yes, because I'm obsessed with Survivor. I've recently been watching seasons 33 and 34, which are both excellent. I will never be on the show, but I really want to get my friend Jenny on the show. Jenny, who had the surprise fourth baby after a vasectomy.
Yes. Yes.
So we're going to make her tape this summer. I'm like, this is happening. Yeah. So I'm trying to get her on there. But other things I'm watching are things I've already seen 5 million times, such as Sherlock, The Good Place,
that.
Arrested Development, Grace and Frankie.
You love to rewatch.
Ooh, Good Girls, a new season came out. Need to get back to that. Not new season for them. The season 3 is finally out. What else? Watched Bridgerton. That's done. Finished Schitt's Creek. That was great. Might start that one again. You know me. I just like watching the same things all over and over again. But then also, that's just my that's just my Netflix queue. So then my Peacock, we're very into Peacock now. There's a lot of shows on Peacock that we are.
Well, that's your, over. That's your Parks and Rec.
Office, Parks and Rec. Everybody Hates Chris. My children, we're now watching the whole series again. I'm raising my children to be just like me. Just watch the same stuff all over and over and over again. And Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor's pretty funny. That's the show with Ted Danson.
That's with Ted Danson.
Yes.
Yes.
So my my children like to think of it as what happened to Michael in The Good Place after it ended. He becomes a mayor.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
I mean, because he wears suits. He looks just like Michael in The Good Place. So there's that. And then what else? I think that's pretty much it. Oh, and we are watching HBO Max. We started The Flight Attendant. And good. Then we've been watching John Oliver. So
okay.
Mostly Survivor, though.
Of all these shows, I love Survivor. I've loved Survivor since the get-go. But see, now I've taken Survivor to the next level and I like to watch alone or Naked and Afraid.
That's how you meant you liked watching Survivor alone and naked.
Yes.
And afraid.
I'm usually.
You're usually naked.
If I'm ever naked, I'm typically afraid. That's how that goes. Okay, well.
What are we talking about today?
Well, this is the
ATTS.
Thing. Okay. So Amanda's going to tell us about her tale, and it is serious, and TTTS is serious. But how this whole conversation started about Netflix is that there's this series on Netflix called The Surgeon's Cut.
Okay, I'm adding it to my list right now. I found it.
And the very first episode of The Surgeon's Cut is a topic called, that the title is Saving Life Before Birth.
Okay. Got it.
And it's about the person who started this fetal surgery of TTTS. And it went into detail. And well, we're going to hear kind of the person side of it, right? So we're going to hear the mom side and Amanda's going to tell us about it. It's really fascinating to look at the medical side. And there is a piece of me, I will never be a doctor, nor will I ever play one on TV. I just don't. But I do have the compassion and I have the fascination with making things better, right? And like rolling the dice and let's see if we could do this. But of course, never at the expense of anybody else. But when it comes to a TTTS situation, what happens is when you have your placenta, okay? So you have your placenta and you have your twins and the twins are sharing a placenta and the placenta is divided disproportionately. So you have a donor who is getting all the stuff from your placenta, a recipient who's getting all the stuff from your placenta, and a donor who is getting gypped of everything in the placenta. And so when you're in a situation like that, all hope is sometimes lost. And so this surgeon was like, we're going to do something about this. We're going to try this. And everybody's like, you're crazy. We can't do this fetal surgery. What's going on? What's going on? And he's like, if we don't try something, these babies could die.
So is this different than the standard procedure that's done, the laparoscopic?
Nope.
This is different?
He's the dude that started it. He's the first dude who was like, we're going to do this.
Okay. So he started it all.
Yes. Which is why I wanted you to watch it, because it's the story of us. It's like literally there's very times in history that you could watch, you know, or learn about the very first procedure that was ever done. So I was under the impression that like TTTS was always a thing and whatever, but it was only since the 70s.
Okay.
So it's not even that long ago. And this dude is still a surgeon. He's still surgering people.
He's still cutting into them.
Well, nobody's getting cut. It's all laparoscopic, but I'm going to tell you, when you watch it, don't expect it to be the feel good story of the year. You know, it is, you're hanging on the edge of your seat during the whole episode. And I could remember watching it with bated breath. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even believe that we were witnessing this family's real time journey of TTTS. And what also I didn't know was that the surgeons will know pretty much immediately if the surgery was effective. Mm-hmm. And it's all done while you're awake. There is no, let's, you know, give you with some twilight anesthesia. It's like, let's give you some topical, let's go in utero. And yeah. Yes, Julie.
I have a question. For our listeners right now who may be freaking out that they might have TTTS, who is at risk for possibly having TTTS? Let's talk about that so that people can kind of maybe take a breath, because this may not apply to you. It really only applies to identical pregnancies.
With one placenta.
With one placenta. All right.
Yes.
So if that's not you, take a breath. But if it is you, talk to your doctor and make sure that they're monitoring you for this.
Yes. And this TTTS is something that I think every twin parent should know about, despite how many placentas you have, because it's something that is only prevalent within our community. And I don't feel that it's just my job to educate you, the listener, but I do feel like it's your job as the listener to ask other people if they've been tested for this. When you find out that you have twin people, like, you know, you meet a woman at a grocery store and she's like, oh my God, I'm having identicals. And you could say, oh my gosh, how's it going? Anything to worry about? You know, have they tested for TTTS? And this is funny, Jewel, because going back to another podcast that we had. So when we were talking about when you have one child with an illness, it goes to the fact that a lot of people don't want to talk about hard things, but by talking about hard things is how people learn. And when we teach Twiniversity classes, right, when we have people in a Twiniversity class, whether it's in person, virtual, on Mars, wherever we'll be teaching in 2 years, it's something that I always talk about, especially if I find out we're having identical people in our class. And I say, what type of pregnancy do you have? So what's crazy is that people don't want to talk about it and they're afraid, but I think you should. It's like, it's part of our little community. And then not only that, Julie and I just recently learned about another extraordinary issue that occurs within multiple birth pregnancies with a single placenta, and that's TAPS. Jewel, what does that stand for?
I literally need to look it up because I forget every time. But I'm going to tapssupport.com to look it up. This is the website that our friend Stephanie created. Her children had TAPS. TAPS stands for, drumroll please, twin anemia polycythemia sequence. It's a rare disease affecting twins sharing a placenta. TAPS in twins has many complications, including a high chance of neural developmental impairment in donor twins, as well as deafness. There is also potential for death and injuries to the babies from TAPS that is not diagnosed before birth. So there's their description.
And what's interesting that we learned from Stephanie was that not everybody who gets tested for TTTS is tested for TAPS. And they are two totally separate animals.
Yeah.
So it's something that if you're having a multiple birth pregnancy with a single placenta, you might actually need to leave the discussion with your doctor.
Yeah. And let me give you a little more information. So that it all has to do with red blood cells. So it's caused by tiny surface connections in the placenta. Red blood cells pass from the donor twin to the recipient twin. And the transfer happens slowly over time. It causes the donor twin to become chronically anemic and the recipient twin to become polycythemic, which is the opposite of anemic.
Yes.
Then it goes on to, this is an interesting way to think about it. Think of this like one twin having blood like rosé wine or Kool-Aid and the other twin having blood as thick as ketchup or molasses.
Mm-hmm.
You can also think of TTTS as the result of a combination of too high and too low blood volume. Oh, sorry. Let me rephrase this. You can also think of TTTS as the result of a combination of too high and too low blood volume, while TAPS is about too high and too low blood concentration. That's the difference.
So yeah, guys, the moral of the story is when I hear people say, I always want the twins, to be honest with you, sitting in the seat where I am, whenever I hear people say that, I always say, do you really? Because there's so much baggage that comes along with a multiple birth pregnancy. Forget about raising them. You guys know that, right? If you're listening to this, odds are you're either pregnant or you have twins. You know that this isn't typical. People who have one baby don't have to go through all of the things that we have to go through, but yes, they're double blessings, but they could be, you know, more issues than usual, but these issues can be corrected, thank God. And doctors like in the surgeon's cut are, you know, pioneers of this. And it's fascinating. And I know that in our generation, right now that I'm 225 years old, I have seen unbelievable progression in fetal health since my twins were born 16 years ago. So I'm excited to see what's happening. And while we think like we're such like an old timey country and like, oh, we're an old timey planet, there's still so much more to learn. And I can't wait to see what happens next. So Julie, you ready to meet Amanda?
Let's do it.
All right, guys. So without further ado, meet my friend Amanda. Good morning, Amanda. It's morning for us. We don't know what time you're listening to this, but Amanda and I are still drinking our coffee.
Yes, we are. Good morning.
Cheers to you, Amanda.
Cheers.
I love it. Okay, let's jump right in because there's honestly, I'm already excited. I this is the best part of my day, by the way. I couldn't wait to talk to you because once I read that you have three boys, you have a 3.5 year old and 21 month old twin identical boys. So you are full boy. There's going to be a lot of pee-pee on the seat in your future. I could predict if there was a crystal ball in front of me, the odor and the pee-pee seat is going to be a lot of fun in your house. Your first son was born at 41 weeks and was 12 pounds, 3 ounces.
Yes.
And holy Moses. And you, how tall are you?
I'm 5'5". I'm not big. I mean, I'm average, I guess.
Oh my God. That's a big baby. Yeah. So yes. Crazy. So now after having a fairly substantial turkey is what I was telling Amanda that her son is larger than our Thanksgiving turkey was this year, which is true. How did your twins' pregnancy go?
The pregnancy itself up until 25 weeks was very uneventful. I found out at 6 weeks that they were twins. So pretty much my first in-person appointment, everything was on track. Mm-hmm. I kind of already knew I'd probably have bigger babies just based on the first one. And then when I went for my 25 week maternal fetal monitoring appointment and they did the ultrasound, they just noticed some differences with the fluids. And then that was when things kind of took a turn, okay. I guess you could say. But up until that point, everything was perfectly normal. I felt fine. I mean, I didn't even feel that different from my first pregnancy. Yeah, it was pretty healthy and good up until that 25 week mark.
So from your 25 week mark now, when, how far did you get into your identical pregnancy?
I delivered at 30 plus one.
But 30 plus, so they were early.
Yeah, they were early.
Aww, my little puppies.
Yeah, they were little big guys, little big babies.
Were you surprised because of your first kind of extraordinary singleton pregnancy? Like, did you just, because of your first experience, did you anticipate just going, you know, the 38 to 41 weeks with your twins?
Well, so my twins are identical. So MODI is the term. You're not actually supposed to go beyond 37 weeks. So you're supposed to deliver by 37 kind of no matter what. So that was my goal. But yeah, based on the first pregnancy, I kind of had it in the back of my head that my body would do it. You know, I can carry a 12 pounder, so I shouldn't have any issues unless I develop, you know, preeclampsia or something. So in the back of my head, I thought, but then I'm also a nurse and I was in a bunch of multiple groups by that point on Facebook. So I kind of was mentally preparing for them being early and having to deal with the NICU and all that. So I think I went in with a pretty open mind, but in the back of my head, I'd have to say, I felt like I'd probably go toward the end, if not to the full 37.
Now, what was the reason at 30 plus one, like what was the forcing hand that you delivered?
So at 25 weeks, I ended up having emergency laser ablation surgery to correct the fluid discordance. Basically, I was diagnosed with twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. And within 2 days of that diagnosis, I was having the emergency surgery to correct that imbalance. So thankfully that worked.
Yeah.
But then you're supposed to be kind of on, not bed rest. Well, some doctors put you on bed rest, but just very minimal activity, kind of basics, what you need to get through the day kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I started at 30 weeks the night before, basically having contractions, and didn't really think too much of it. And finally decided, oh, I better go in just in case, you know. So then I went in, and it ended up, I did deliver that next morning around 11.
Yeah.
And I think the technical reason was due to placental abruption, mm-hmm. but they didn't really realize that until they went in and did the C-section that okay. my placenta was actually separating. So basically I went into labor, but that's probably why I went into labor.
Okay. Did you have the placental abruption because of the TTTS surgery?
They said it can be, or it can okay. just be random. I mean, some people have it for, you know, extraordinary reasons, like they get yeah. in a car accident or something, yes. trauma, but a lot of people it just separates. So they don't really ever know for sure, but it could likely be related to that.
Okay.
It could be a random thing that happened to me. But yeah, basically once they do that surgery, your uterus is mm-hmm. compromised because yeah. they go in through your belly with the needle. So we may never know, but.
Well, let me fill in our listener on just a few things, because if you guys don't know what TTTS, it's twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome, which means that when your twins are identical and they share a placenta, the placenta is divided unequally. So there is a donor twin that is receiving all the blood, all the nutrients, all the everything. And then there is a donor twin who is basically not getting that and is not thriving. What happens is that depending upon your situation, a doctor may advise you to have this ablation surgery where they physically go in where Amanda was awake, and they go in and they surgically laser the placenta, they fuse it so that instead of there being a donor and a recipient, there is a more equal divide of the placenta goodness into the 20s. When this happens only in identical pregnancies and identical pregnancies that share a placenta. So please do not think that if you were having identicals and you have two different placentas, this is nothing that you have to worry about. This unfortunately is something that we are very well versed with at Twiniversity, because as you can imagine, it is not uncommon for us to see identical twins. And to be honest with you, Amanda, I'm noticing from about May of last year that there is a bigger influx of identical pregnancies. Don't know why, don't know if it's in the water, don't know if there's just something in the air that is not coronavirus, but there is definitely something that's happening where we're seeing kind of this influx of twinnies. If you need more information, you could go to Twiniversity and look up TTTS, because we have a ton of resources, because we need to, because this is just what has to happen. Now, with Amanda's situation, you delivered at 31 on the day, which is actually a successful delivery, but it's not exclusive. You may actually be able to go much longer with your ablation surgery. So 30 weeks, one day, you deliver, twinnies go to the NICU.
Yes.
How long were they there?
They were there 53 days. They were close to going home at the same time. So I kind of pushed and finagled and got them to go home the same day, mainly because we live an hour from the hospital and we have the toddler at home. So luckily they were both able to go home together at the 53 day mark. So that was
not bad at all, man. 53 days is good. And for those of you too that aren't preemie moms, like I delivered at 34, but you should never expect your babies to go home until their actual due date. So if you do go into the NICU, you just should be prepared that they're going to be there for a minute. So 53 days is pretty swell. I have to say, that's great.
Yeah, it felt like a lifetime at the time, but I know a lot of moms have kids there a lot longer, and yeah, once you're out, it's almost like it didn't happen. It's the weirdest thing.
it really is, because I think you get thrown into the world of raising your twins and you don't have a moment to kind of catch your breath and reflect on what happens. Now, fast forward, they're 21 months. Oh, by the way, how big were they when they were born? Because I know everybody's going to want to ask.
They were both just under 4 pounds.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So you were going to have turkeys again?
Probably. Probably two more, maybe like Cornish game hens or something. I don't know. But they were, they were still considered large for gestational age, despite
smoke.
Yeah. So I think that worked in their favor, because they didn't really have any significant NICU complications. Yeah. One was on oxygen for like an hour. They were both jaundiced, but it was just kind of minor, typical things, mainly just feeding and growing. So I think there's work to their advantage.
Unbelievable. That's really impressive. Yeah. So you did good. Yes, yeah, I'm proud of you.
Good and bad. They're here. So.
Listen, we could only control so much. And I think one of the unfortunate parts of a twin pregnancy is that at some point you realize that you have no control over the pregnancy, and that you just have to kind of go with what, you know, Mother Nature is taking you down that road, and you kind of just gotta jump in and go for the ride. So at 21 months now, reflecting on your NICU experience, what are some of the pieces of advice that you would give to a twin parent, especially identical twin parent who's been through TTTS? What piece of advice would you give them to make their experience maybe a little bit better?
When they're after they're out of once they're home or when they're pregnant?
No, when they're in the NICU, like what's your big 53 days, you're such a graduate of the NICU. What's your big NICU advice?
I guess just not to be too hard on yourself. It can get overwhelming. You know, the nurses and everybody want you to be there every day for everything, and they want you to do lactation, CPT and COT. And it just is kind of overwhelming on top of, you know, if you're breastfeeding, if you're pumping, whatever you have going on at home. So I think just to go easy on yourself and realize they're not even supposed to be here yet. And I kind of kept that in my head, like, this is bonus time with the babies and I'm doing the best I can. They're not going to remember all of this, and they're in the best possible place for their care. That was just kind of what I reminded myself. I feel like around the 2-week mark, I kind of had this weird hit this wall, I guess, where I kind of felt like NICU was never going to end, and I got really depressed. But then after a few days, I kind of came out of that, and then it was, you know, I was motivated again. So I think it's normal to kind of eventually have your feelings catch up with everything's happening. That's happening, maybe crash for a few days, and that's okay, because your mental health and taking care of yourself is more important almost than taking care of the babies at that time. Because if you're not there and you're not present and you're not healthy, how are you going to be a mom? So I just think a lot of moms are really hard on themselves about the NICU and however their pregnancy ends. And, you know, there's just a lot of guilt and pressure. So
yeah, there's unfortunately a lot of trauma that goes along with an early delivery and delivery in general. Even if you had a C-section and you wanted a vaginal delivery, like I know some people might dismiss that as, you know, unimportant and the babies are healthy and everything is good and what do you want? It doesn't mean that somebody doesn't carry the kind of heaviness with them. So now, with speaking about the guilt and all of that, you had experienced some postpartum anxiety. Did that happen starting in the NICU, or were the babies home after their 53 days and the dust was kind of settling from that?
I think it probably happened as soon as they were born, but I honestly feel like I was in survival mode for those 53 days, just trying to have as much time with my toddler as possible, and then driving to the NICU every day and just balancing. And I was exclusively pumping for the most part. I was trying to breastfeed them in the NICU, but I was honestly just in survival mode. So I think when they came home, then combined with the absolute lack of any sleep, that's when it really just hit me like a truck, basically. And then I don't want to say I resisted it, but I tried to work through it. And just eventually, I don't even know how many weeks it was, I ended up going to my doctor and they ended up getting me Zoloft. And that was a life-changing experience. And I'd never taken any of those types of medications before. So that maybe would be my second piece of advice, is if you're worried about it, afraid of it, don't be. Just go talk to your doctor. Try it. If it doesn't work, you can always stop. It doesn't mean you're going to be on something forever, but honestly, it was life changing. So
I think mood disorders in general, postpartum mood disorders, are way underdiagnosed. And especially when it comes to NICU families. And Amanda, as a nurse, I'm sure that, you know, you have friends in, you know, obstetrics and, you know, postpartum care, But typically postpartum mood disorders are diagnosed through your pediatrician. So like if your pediatrician sees a red flag, you know, you of the pediatrician would say, hey, like, let's talk about this. And maybe you should call your OB and get that. But often with NICU families, it goes underdiagnosed because we're spending the first, in your case, 53 days in the NICU. And there is nobody that has specific eyes on us because the nurses that are in the NICU are trained to put their eyes on the babies because those are the patients. You are no longer considered a patient when you are discharged from the hospital. So in a NICU situation, you know, I would love to say it's surprising and I'm, you know, that's rare, but I wish that we could normalize the postpartum, you know, mood disorders, whether it's anxiety, whether it's depression, whether it's OCD. Like there are actually some significant postpartum issues that occur. So yeah, like I appreciate that so much, by the way, Amanda, truthfully, that you even brought it up. And I always say before we start any podcast, and for those of you that are listening, what you guys don't know is I always asked any of our guests, is there anything that I can talk about? Because it's interesting that some people will say, I don't want to talk about depression. Like they might still be in the eye of the storm and not out yet and ready to discuss it. But we're so fortunate that you are just honest and open and you're like, hey, this happened, grab some Zoloft, pop them up. Like, this is great. And I wish that that could be that. I wish that that discussion can be the normal.
Yeah.
In our community.
Direction. I think it is, at least online it is. And I should add, I have Kaiser. So I don't know if all insurance is the same, but I had to go to a psychiatrist first, and then she had to refer me to a postpartum support group. Mm-hmm. It was mandatory, 6 weeks of classes. That was amazing. So there were other things involved. It wasn't just walk in, get medication.
Yes.
Even with my first, I did go to a new mother support group. In hindsight, I think I probably had a little bit of this going on then too, mm-hmm. but I went to the support group and that was amazingly helpful. So anything you can do along those lines is going to help. For me, medication was, I guess, the last step of that process, but it wasn't just go in and, you know, have somebody hand you a pill. So I don't want people to feel like there aren't other things you can do.
Oh no, there's a ton that you could do. And I don't even know if you know this, but Twiniversity has a monthly meetup that's run by a social worker. And specifically it is for situations where you might not have a local twin club, but you need that connection and support. So we kind of made it a little bit more official, and you guys could just go to twiniversity.com/memberships. This isn't like a sell by any means, but it really is a way to connect with other families. And that's when, like you said, like, you know, it's pretty normal within our community. If you hadn't been in our community previous to your delivery, you might not know that, this is what we talk about. We talk about it, you know, when we teach Twiniversity classes, I always talk about like hemorrhoids and incontinence and all these other things that nobody talks about, but they're things that happen, right?
For sure.
you're not going to have drinks with the girls, especially now in the middle of a pandemic. You know, you're not having these conversations with your BFFs. So we're trying, we're really, really trying. Okay, now let's go through a day in our life with our babies. But before we do that, I want to take a quick break. So just sit right there and we will see you in, I don't know, anywhere from 30 to 70 seconds. It depends on how long I keep talking during this commercial.
Okay.
Hey, you. It's me, Nat, a Twiniversity. If you are currently expecting and you're like, what? There's a Twiniversity class? I want to say welcome. Welcome out of the bunker. Yes, Twiniversity has been teaching classes for over 10 years, and we have taught literally, is that the right way to say it? Literally? Literally thousands of expecting twin families all around the world, and we want you to be one of them. So head on over to twiniversity.com/classes. Check out our online class, our in-person classes, our live online classes. There is a plethora. Fancy word of the day. I got 50 cents for saying that word. What was I saying? See, now this is what happens. I get distracted, but in a good way. Yep. Join us for a Twiniversity class, twiniversity.com/classes. I can't wait to have you in there. You will learn things like, oh my gosh, what are the things that I can't do too soon? Oh no, how do I change a diaper? What is my partner supposed to do on delivery day? Yeah, we got you covered. We've been there, done that, and literally wrote the book. So check us out at twiniversity.com/classes.
All right. I want to go through a day in the life of the 20s. You have your three boys, 21 month old IDs, and a 3.5-year-old son. Gotta yes. love this. I want to know what happened yesterday. It's still too early in the day to kind of discuss today, but what is, oh, I love it. If there was chaos yesterday, bring it yes, on, girl.
Because it was a milestone and insanity. So honestly, like of all days for you to ask about, starting with, I was supposed to go get my COVID vaccine and that didn't happen due to baby A. So a few days ago, he decided to learn to crib jump to baby B, which was kind of fine. But then yesterday morning, he learned to jump out of his crib.
Oh no.
Our room and surprised us. So nap time yesterday was a fiasco. But if you want me to start at the beginning, how beginning? Like they wake up?
Hold on. I want to talk about the beginning, but please, you literally cannot skate over crib jumping, which is a new type of parkour. If you yeah. are familiar with the wonderful phenomenon. So the crib jumping, how far apart are their cribs? Like what's the layout of their room?
So theirs are actually the two long sides together. They're actually touching. And then I have one crib bumper that separates that whole arm of the crib.
Okay.
Because of the configuration of the room with the windows and the closet and the door, it was kind of the best way to put them not by a window, not by the blinds. And, you know, they pretty much have to be touching somehow. Okay. Originally, they were kind of an L shape, but now they're just a hot dog. Long way to long end. So
and now do you have the cribs attached somehow so that they don't roll apart?
They're regular cribs. So no, they're legs. But I have these crib wrap things that go around the rails for biting. Okay. So if they bite on the top, so those actually tie. So I have one tied on the long one that ties them together. And that was mainly because they were always hitting their heads and when they first started standing up.
Okay.
So it just protects the top of the rails. If they're biting on them, it'll protect their teeth a little bit. Okay. So I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. It does actually. Well, to me, it makes sense. I hope to our listeners, it does too.
Soft thing that goes on the top, not inside.
But there is some way. So a twin cannot slide through the center of the two cribs. Okay.
Yeah,
that's all that I'm asking about. Wouldn't be able to. Yeah. So I got our visual. They started crib jumping. Okay. Now let's go back to what time are they waking up in the morning?
They're usually waking up around 7 or 7:30. And then my toddler, actually also this week, we got him a toddler clock that turns green when it's okay for him to come out of his room because he's in his toddler bed. And so he usually comes and gets us at 7, but he probably wakes up more like 6:30. So. Okay.
So we have a good established morning time routine. When do you think that started? Like, when do you feel like you had your groove? Because now that they're a little bit bigger, when do you, like, for the parents that are listening with littler 20s, when is the light going to actually, when are they going to get to that light at the end of the tunnel?
So I have to say sleep was the number one hardest thing of this whole process with the twins. And I think the biggest contributor to my mental state, honestly, I would say it was a year before it was a full night of sleep without them waking up at all. But I think maybe around the 10 month mark is where they were down to only waking up once.
Okay.
Maybe roughly around then. And so that was fine. That was manageable. So I think they progressed properly through how long they're supposed to be waking and sleeping and all of that. It's just, there's two, it's a lot. So, and we always did the wake up one when the other wakes up. So everyone's on the same schedule. And I think we probably stopped that around the 9 or 10 month mark.
Okay. So they get up at between 7 and 7:30. And where do we go from there? Are we doing a diaper change? Are we going right into the living room for a feed? What happens after we wake up?
So we're all upstairs. All the bedrooms are upstairs. We have a loft playroom upstairs. So basically I change them, get them dressed, change the toddler, get him dressed. And then my husband and I are up there kind of getting ready. And then we're all downstairs by, I would say 8:30. And then that's when I give them their milk and then start making breakfast and kind of put everybody in their chairs and everyone just basically waits for breakfast, and my husband's usually helping me with all that or doing breakfast. So we're pretty routine with the whole morning, I would say. And I'm
what's a typical breakfast for the boys?
For the babies, for the twins, they're still doing breast milk. And then they'll usually in the morning do toast and eggs and some type of fruit. Those are pretty much the three. And then sometimes yogurt or part of a yogurt. They're good eaters, so they'll eat all the normal breakfast stuff. So
beautiful. Yeah, pretty
consistent. Great. So actually, they have a toddler now.
It ebbs and flows. I feel like when the babies are little, it's so much easier to feed them. And then once they start getting their pickiness, then heck breaks loose. Good times.
Fun times. They're still in the we're excited about food stage. I don't think they've reached the picky, although they're not big fans of vegetables, I've noticed, to green beans and stuff. One says no.
They're adamantly against vegetables. I love that. That's cute. Listen, they're going to have their preferences, and then it's our job as parents to figure out how to get those vegetables in them. There's always a way. I needed to always mix my, I found that my kids really liked edamame at that age. Oh. Weird. I would have never tried it in a million years, but we went someplace and somebody made succotash, which is basically lima beans, corn, some onions. Yep. And so I was like, let me try that, which is edamame. I don't know why. To be honest, I have no idea why I picked that over lima beans. I think it was easier. It's just, I don't like lima beans, but I like it. Like, I was like, if I'm going to make it and they're not going to eat it, I want to at least be able to eat this food. But that was like the big hot ticket. At around that age.
Right. They've never tried.
It's weird. Yeah. I would have never even thought about it, to be honest with you. But it was our friend Christy who her kids loved it. I don't even know how this happened. But anyway, I digress. After breakfast, what do we do?
I usually try to drink coffee. My husband's usually leaving for work at that time. He works somewhat later, like late morning to late evening hours. So then I'm on my own with them and I feed the dogs, my two male dogs, just to add to all the testosterone here in this house. I feed them because they're usually cleaning up the high chair mess too for me. So that's helpful. Get dogs. That's my other piece of advice. Get dogs. It's true. You don't have dogs because
Amanda, you are not the only person that says that. I feel like people who have as soon as their kids start eating, they're like, I don't know how I would do this without a dog. It's so funny. The dog is the original Roomba.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I don't feed my dogs table food per se, but luckily what the babies eat is mostly healthy and okay for a dog. So, you know, for most of the cleanup, they're good. But yeah, so I clean everything up and then usually everybody just kind of plays in the living room or sometimes we go for a walk. Now we have for the twins, a wagon that we pull, like a little red wagon. And then the toddler, he has a fire truck he can drive or he'll walk. So walks are a lot more fun now. I don't have to break out a stroller and do all that. And then we just got our backyard done, thankfully. So we have a backyard we can play in when the weather's nice. So I just try to do something. Honestly, in the morning is usually me trying to make it to nap time. And so if there's nothing structured, we're usually just playing, reading books, kind of whatever everybody wants to do. But they're big climbers and active. Sometimes they just run loops in the kitchen. If I put a specific song on that they love, they all just chase each other in a circle around the island. So it doesn't have to be anything like, you know, crazy if they're happy and they're having fun.
Yes.
So.
You don't have to have a structured art project every day. No. It's not necessary. Thank goodness we don't. That's what school is for later on down the line.
Exactly. We do those once in a while, but
What about naps? So you mentioned that you're just trying to make it to naps. What time does nap time begin?
Usually it used to be around noon to three, they would all nap. And I was strict about it. Like they would stay up, they would sleep in the room for the 2 to 3 hours, even the 3-year-old. So that was like a perfect scenario. So usually we eat lunch and then clean up and then we'll all make our way upstairs and start getting ready for naps, and everybody still wears a sleep sack. So they kind of know the routine and the twins will start saying sleep sack. And we brush teeth and then everybody gets in their bed until yesterday. So
everybody just goes in until yesterday with the crib jumping. Typically though, you would put them in, and do you have kind of a different nap time routine than a bedtime routine? Like, is there anything like special about nap time, or is it lights out? Do you have room darkening curtains? Do you have a white noise machine? What is their setup for sleep?
We have the noise machine for both. So no, there's not really anything different. I would say we read less books for nap. Usually I only do like one book for naps, and at nighttime we tend to read more books. Okay. I wish we had the darkening curtains. Maybe that would help. But no, it's pretty much the same. Brush teeth, change diaper, put on sleep sack, turn on the noise machine, and read a book. So I'm pretty consistent with all that.
Beautiful. So they go in for their nap. How long are they sleeping?
They were sleeping for 2 to 3 hours. So hopefully we can go back to that if baby A will comply. Because once the jumping happened, first he was jumping into B bed, and then now he was jumping out and running in and out of the room. And then baby B would fall asleep and he would go in there and like squawk at him through the bars. So we'll see. But they were really good sleepers, all, you know. And thankfully my toddler slept through all of that yesterday. So
we'll chaos. See. How did you feel about having your quiet time disrupted? Did it kind of jiggle up your day too?
It did. I'm not going to lie. I was a little upset about that. Not upset, but just annoyed. And also, like I mentioned, I was supposed to be going to get my vaccine yesterday. So my mom, who was going to hide downstairs and just be here while they napped so I could run and get my shot. And so when baby A started with his shenanigans, he was literally jumping out of the crib and following me back out of the room. And I put him back in maybe 20 times. I sat in there till he was almost asleep. He wanted to go to sleep, but he just didn't. He realized he could get out, and that was it. So she said, "You can't go because I don't want to see them or touch them because of COVID and all this." So, you know, be prepared for your plans to change all the time. But honestly, after a few hours, I was fine, and I'm just hoping it's not an everyday thing, and maybe they'll get older and I can reason with them a little bit. But that's part of the problem. They're young, and you know, I can tell my 3-year-old, you know, you need to go back in your room and wait, and he would understand, but they're not really at that stage, you know.
Unfortunately.
I do get a little annoyed.
I feel you. That initial frustration when there's any schedule change and it's going to be there for a minute. The novelty hopefully will wear off with the crib jumping and then everything will kind of resume back. But it is a big milestone. On the plus side, you may have an adventure sports person who could be part of the X Games and, you know, pay for our retirement fees down the line. You never know. So I try to always keep a positive attitude of what are the positives of this? Because if you don't, I'll just go into a murderous rage, and that's not really going to help anybody.
Exactly.
So now after a typical situation, they would go down for 2 to 3 hours. When they get up at 3 hours, what happens for the rest of our day till bedtime?
First they squawk like seagulls, snack, 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 until I bring them down and give them a snack. But it's kind of the same thing. I get them dressed again or take off the sleep sack, bring them back down. I usually just give them a little snack. And then that's more consistent where we'll go outside or go for the walk. I feel like it was also different before COVID. But yeah, that's basically it. We'll go outside, or we'll go for a walk, or we'll go to the park. We're really lucky. There's a ton of parks within walking distance. There's even a small one right across the street. So we'll do something like that. And if I have any kind of structured craft or anything like that planned, then that's usually when we would do that, because I would set it up during their nap time. So yeah.
I love this. Okay. So they're up. Is that their only nap for the day? Are they taking a little cat nap in front of, you know, a screen at some point? No. So they're done for the day. We have playtime. What time is dinner for us?
5:30.
And do you eat with the kiddos, or are they having their 5:30 dinner and then you're going to relax and unwind later?
It kind of depends. I would say when I have a prepared meal that I eat with them, because then I kind of plate everybody's at the same time and then we all sit down and eat. Otherwise they're kind of eating and I'm standing in the kitchen, you know, bringing them their stuff. It just kind of depends on what we're having, but my husband isn't home from work at that time anyway, so it's just me. But if I'm not sitting at the table with them while they eat, I'm standing nearby in the kitchen. But I typically end up eating second dinner anyway when my husband comes home. So if I avoid eating their dinner, then that's a plus. But it just kind of depends on the night and how hungry I am by that point.
Okay. So we have our dinner at 5:30. Dinner gets finished up. What do the evenings look like? And when does your husband get home?
I try to keep the evening low key. So you will usually just play Duplos or something in the living room, read books, just kind of hang out basically. Mm-hmm. But babies, I take them up to start bedtime at 6, okay. 6:30. And then my toddler follows after that. So 7:30. And typically he gets home around 6:45. So if anything, it ends up, I'm putting the twins to bed, doing their whole routine. And then he kind of comes home and either does all that for the toddler or picks up, you know, the end of it and reads some more books or something. But he doesn't get off at the exact same time. So it's kind of, we play every night by ear, but they're pretty consistent. Like they know kind of a little bit after we eat, we're all going to be going up, you know.
And so for those of you that are listening, you could hear them running in the background. Are they above you?
Sorry.
No, what are you saying? Sorry. We've had podcasts where the kids are literally in with us and, you know,
doesn't get
a chance to separate. No, I think it's sweet. I think it's really sweet. And I think it's nice that everybody gave you your space to just chat with us. I feel bad. Usually that people are taking their free time that they could be in a tub reading a book and they're playing with us. So
no, I want to. I'm happy to do this. So
I love this. Now, are they sleeping through the night? Everything good now? Oh, that's nice.
Yes. Yes. And they've all been good sleepers, I would say, the whole time, for whatever their age was at that time. But I'm hoping this crib jumping thing doesn't branch off into night. But I don't think it will because it's dark. So I'm hoping, you know,
I hope so too, for your sake. Now, what do you do with your nights? How do you spend your evenings?
So I do like a mass cleanup as soon as everyone's in bed, just putting everything back away, loading the dishwasher, kind of cleaning up the sink, doing all that. And then if I end up sitting on the couch too soon, I will not get back up. So I try not to, I'll just end up binge watching something. But I pump after they go to bed and it depends. Like sometimes I'm packing my lunch if I'm going to work the next day.
Yeah.
That's when I would be showering. You know, I pretty much do all my stuff at night. So if I have anything to do on the computer, any bills to pay, any, you know, normal, like things that would normally be spread out throughout the day, just get pushed to after bedtime.
Later in the evening. Now, now that I'm thinking about it, okay, your son is 3.5 and then your 20s are 21 months. So you had not that big of a span, between them.
2 months apart. Yeah.
So with that, were you still breastfeeding your son when you got pregnant with the twins?
No, I think I had stopped. I stopped with him at the year mark. And with him, I was breastfeeding him and I was only pumping when I was at work.
Okay.
So that was, I had been done when I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. So then I started with them. I've been pumping in the beginning, when they were in the NICU, I breastfed them when I was there and then I pumped when I was at home. And from about them being home for about 2 weeks, I was exclusively pumping because it was too much to try to pump. We had to supplement every bottle to give them NeoSure. So even if they had been successfully breastfeeding, I would have had to breastfeed, put some in a bottle, also give them the bottle, and then two babies and the toddler. So something had to give.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I just made the decision, not unfortunately, but I made the decision to just exclusively pump. And I've been doing that ever since.
What was your, walk me through the deciding factor that if you breastfed your son for the year and now you're going 21 months with the 20s, do you think that because you're exclusively pumping, it's just easier and you're like, we could keep going?
It kind of is. I would have to say my goal was a year. I felt like if I could do it for a year, that would be beyond a win. And I was going to stop. I was actually counting down the days, but then their year was in March, which was also in the pandemic. So at that point, my supply was still good. So I kind of felt like everything is unknown with this virus. So I just decided to keep going and kind of see what my supply would do. And I did drop one or two pumping sessions at that point. And I just kind of decided to let my body run its course, I guess. And it's just been like that ever since. So I'm not producing enough for both all the time. Like, we'll usually have to end up giving them milk at some point. Like maybe one day I'm short a bottle or something like that, but for the most part I'm still doing that. And so now if I hit the 2-year mark, I'm done. Like, that's, I'm gonna come back
Amanda,
on
and that's amazing,
but it's hard. It's a mental, I don't even know if it's easier than breastfeeding. I don't know what's easier. They're both hard.
I honestly humbly agree, but I think some people just find the time for pumping is kind of a nice break from everything. And so people, you know, sometimes choose to pump longer just to have that minute to themselves, because all you're doing is putting on a pump. I was an exclusive pumper as well. I would have loved to, you know, as a lactation consultant, I would have loved to be able to have them to the tap, but in hindsight, I just really didn't have the support or the education. And especially now in COVID, it's happening so much that people aren't getting that initial lactation support. But exclusive pumping, if that's what you do, there should be no shame in that game. That's amazing. And the fact that you made it 21 months is absolutely extraordinary. I'm so proud of you. That's like such a win.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And it is your alone time. And I think when they were really little, there was a little bit of that. I knew I could get away and, you know, no matter what, I would get that break if somebody was home with me. So that's true. And it's kind of your downtime at night. And but sometimes when I wake up in the morning and I realize like, I have to wake up a little bit earlier so I can do this before everybody gets up, those are the moments where you just feel like it's this thing. And then at work, it's really hard to get the breaks, especially now. But I'm making it work. I just take it one day at a time.
Oh, you're doing it, girl. Now, for those that are listening, what is your big takeaway? 21 months, you've made it this far, exclusively pumping, NICU experience with a singleton. When you meet a parent of twins in the street.
Yes.
Once, remember when that used to happen, when you used to see humans. When we go back to that, what is the one piece of advice that you're going to give to a twin mom? And you're going to say, listen, no matter what, I really think that this is a great idea.
Oh gosh. Well, I'm definitely a creepy person because I have met those twin moms and I'm like, oh, you have twins. And then I'm instantly, you know, the whole weird thing we do, but I've made a few good friends that way. I don't know. I mean, I hate to say it goes so fast because that's cliche, but it does. And honestly, it all just feels like a dream that happened to somebody else at some point. And then that makes you kind of sad. So I would say take a lot of pictures, document, because you're not going to remember a good chunk of what happens in that first year, and just realize you're going to sleep again. Even though it doesn't feel that way. I mean, I can remember crying at night, feeling like I was never going to sleep, and you just feel like you're absolutely losing your mind. And then one day it's not like that anymore. So I don't know, I don't have like one solid black and white piece of advice, but just to try to take it all in and keep telling yourself that it's going to change very quickly and it's going to get easier and more fun.
Yeah, it really does. As they say, I don't know who they are, but they always say that the hours are long, but the years are short.
That's true. That's definitely true. Because I can't believe they're about to be 2 and he's about to be 4. And I feel like I just was pregnant. And, you know, now you can hear them all demolishing the loft. So
it's fun. Listen, that's what you're going to have, a house full of boys. It's going to be so extraordinary. I'm so excited. Yeah. And I'm honored that you took the time to chat with us today. And I know that if you think that it's getting good now, it gets so much better.
Yeah.
It's so much better. And every year there's just new little things that happen and they turn into, you know, friends, and it's going to be great. I love my son. I have a boy girl twins, and my son is at the stage where he doesn't want me to hug him anymore, but I really don't care is how I feel about that. And so yesterday I was hugging him and I was like, he's like, Mom, leave me be. I was like, nope. I said, this is for all the time that you would never let me have an inch of space. I am now going to just hold you for hours against your will. So that was it. So he just sat there and he just took it. I was like, well, it wasn't hours, it was minutes. But that was a small win for me. But it's interesting how they evolve. And I know that I could picture two when they were two, like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And you're going to blink and, you know, I think someday they're going to go to college and they're going to maybe get married and have kids of their own. But yeah, it's wild. It really does. And I know that it gets a little dark for most twin families and it feels a little hopeless, but you know, Amanda and I are here to tell you there is light at the end of the tunnel.
And take help, no matter how type A you are, whatever help you can possibly get. And it's really hard right now in the pandemic, but honestly, you need help. There's just, you only have so many hands. So it's not a sign of weakness. I'm very type A. I'm a nurse. I want to do everything, control everything, and just let that go. And even if it's just for a year or 6 months, just, you know, be a little accepting and just let people come in and help you.
Oh, you are the best, Amanda. Thank you so much for playing with us today. I hope I'm never in a hospital in Southern California, but if I am, I hope that you find me. I will be calling you, God forbid that ever happens. And I'm doing some kind of lecture in your neck of the woods. So yeah, I have no problem asking for help. I've taken your advice and right. I always dream like one day we'll have like a big, like Twiniversity conference and we'll just play for a weekend and just relax and enjoy each other's company. So you never know, maybe I'll see you there.
That would be amazing. I would love that.
Oh, me too. All right, guys, this has been another conversation. I always love getting little glimpses inside people's lives. And, you know, if you have questions for Amanda, or if you have more questions for us, even whether it's about TTTS, postpartum mood disorders, whatever, you can email us at community@twiniversity.com. Please do not forget to click subscribe to this so that automatically you'll get the next episode download to your phone, because we're starting to get complaints that when is the next episode going to come out? Well, honestly, I can't tell you. It's going to be whenever, you know, whatever you are listening to this podcast on allows us to release it. So make sure you subscribe. It'll get downloaded. And don't forget to twiniversity.com is where you'll find a ton more information. And we have a great YouTube channel as well. So if you get bored in the middle of the night, well, I don't recommend you pick up your phone and check out Twiniversity, because we're going to give you those hopeful stories when you're in those dark days. And we're going to try to support you as best as we possibly can. Until next time, guys. I will see you later, alligators. Thanks for listening.
Hey friends, it's Julie, the Twiniversity Wizard, and I am here to tell you about a new class that we just released that I think you are really going to dig. It is called the Complete Baby Safety Course. Now, this course is on demand, which means that it's a series of videos that you could take on your own schedule at any time of the day or night. And you and your partner can watch it together. You could watch it separately. You could share it with grandma, your nanny. It's going to be great for the whole family. So what's included in the course? Infant, toddler, and child CPR, infant, toddler, and child choking, also known as the Heimlich maneuver. You're also going to learn first aid for infants, toddlers, and children, car seat safety for those ages as well, and childproofing, how you're going to get your house ready for when your babies start moving around, right? So the class is offered as a 3-month access or a 5-year access. I really feel like the 5-year access is going to be phenomenal for you, because you're going to be able to go back and watch it whenever you need to. You can come back every year on their birthday and watch it again to refresh on CPR methods and to figure out, like, oh no, we're moving from infant seats to convertible seats. How does that work? So for more information, visit twiniversity.com/safety, and I hope you enjoy it.